by Barbara Cartland. Narrated by Anthony Wren. Chapter 1. 1818. The yacht moved up the Thames. The Duke of Rockcliffe thought how very different everything was from when he had left England. 7 years ago, he had been just Alexander Rock, a young lieutenant in the family regiment of the Horse Guards, and had left to join the Duke of Wellington's army in Portugal. He had no idea then that there was any career for him in the future except in the army. His father was the younger son of the 6th Duke of Rockcliffe, but there were 3 prospective heirs between Alex, as he was always called, and the dukedom. He had been determined to make a success of his profession as a soldier, and he had succeeded admirably. In Wellington's brilliant campaign, when he had surprised the French by reaching the Pyrenees in 1813 and established a firm base in southwest France by the spring of 1814, Captain Alexander Rock had been awarded 2 gold medals for outstanding bravery. After the Battle of Waterloo in 1815, Wellington had congratulated him, saying, "I could not have done it without you, Alex." No soldier could have asked for any more, and Alex Rock had been truly thrilled by the great commander's appreciation of his conduct in what had been for him a terrifying encounter with the enemy. 12 times during that battle, he thought that his end had come and he would never see England again. What he really minded more than anything else was losing some of the men who had fought beside him ever since he had joined Wellington's army. Now they lay dead on the battlefield amongst the French and Prussian casualties. It was the Duke of Wellington who had insisted on Alex staying with him when the army of occupation was set up in Cambrai, and it was to stay there for 3 years. Alex had in fact thought that he should return home when his father died suddenly of a stroke. But the Duke of Wellington would not let him go. "I need you, Alex," he said. "I need the keenness of your brain in the dealings we're going to have with the French, which will doubtless be worse than anything we have encountered on a battlefield." They had both laughed, and at the same time, the Duke was right, as the long and tedious negotiations were tiring and often exasperating. There were, however, brief intervals of relaxation, as Paris quickly returned to her former cosmopolitan self. Inevitably, the cafes and theatres reopened, and the women that Paris had already been famous for reappeared, and the privations of being continuously campaigning were rapidly forgotten. Alex found it delightful to be able to relax with an exceedingly attractive courtesan who was so outstandingly proficient in her profession. There were wild parties and enchanting nights that any young man who was a man would enjoy. Then it was back to Cambrai, and the difficulty of keeping an army of 150,000 men from being bored by having nothing to do. It was Alex, on Wellington's instructions, who organised sports for them. There were endless games of football in the winter, cricket and athletics in the summer, and then regular horse races were organised for every man who could ride. The difficulty was to keep thinking of something new to maintain the morale of the troops, most of whom longed to be back home in England. Alex worked extremely hard at it, both mentally and physically, and when he went to bed at night, he fell asleep as soon as his head touched the pillow. However, the lengthy dealings with the French were gradually drawing to a close. The Duke of Wellington said confidentially to Alex that he intended to close down the army of occupation by the end of the summer. "There are just a few matters that we must tie up first," he said, having already agreed to more than 30,000 men returning early to England, and that left 120,000 to dispose of at a later date. It was now early on in May, and Alex was thinking of what new amusements and games he could suggest for the last 2 months. Then came the news that had been delayed through poor communications that the 6th Duke of Rockcliffe had died. Alex...